Feels official now, doesn't it?
It does. Serum Improv episode 4, titled How to Run a Podcast Without a Guest.
Titled On Our Minds.
Yeah.
Yes. Steal Brené Brown.
Yes. On Our Minds.
Although I guess hers episode. Is more first person singular, on my mind, but yes. Since we're two people, we get to say on our minds.
Yes, yes. Is that plagiarism if we changed my to our?
That's right.
How do we want to kick this one off?
I think with the 3-2-1 is the best way to start that off. Here we are. Welcome to CR Improv, listeners. I'm one of your co-hosts, Jamie Gleason. Here with me this morning or afternoon or evening or whenever you're listening to this is my other co-host, Mickey. How are you today, Mickey Baines?
I am fantastic. You know, it's spring. Most schools are in the midst coming off of gearing up for commencement. It is one of my favorite times to be on a campus. One of the times I miss the most from working on campus. And even though I'm not able to be on the road traveling and actually getting to any of those campuses during their commencement periods, I'm seeing it posted online and watching and reading about it. So it's a great, great fun time, I think, in our world when we're in higher ed.
My favorite type of living is that vicarious living through social media.
So, through social media. Oh, I don't know. That puts a spin on it for me, Jimmy. I don't know.
You're viewing it online. Like, so what are you like looking at the website of your campus? Yeah, they don't update it that frequently.
Watch the social feeds, but you know, I don't like to put it into the context of following life through social media. Oh,
all right. Well, I'll frame it up differently next time I say something like that. So, Sorry to typecast that one. I think you're absolutely right. This is a beautiful, like, I feel like if I had to put it into one sentence, summer is in the air. And with that comes, you know, like you said, the campus beautification of the pre-commencement era. I love that part when the campus like goes from looking all weedy with no mulch to like fresh mulch and everything looks so perfect when commencement happens. But this is also the time of year when budget decisions are finally realized and finalized, and the new contracts are starting to kind of come around. And with that, we are going to dig in today to a topic that is really hinged to some of those contractual decisions that maybe have been made in the spring. And that is the implementation and expectation timeline of CRM land. And what's that mean? I mean, so let's distill this. The last couple episodes we've talked about with a couple of friends of ours who have really talked about like that assessment process of CRM implementation and what that looks like. But there's really a flip side to this decision. And I think that what I'd, you know, ask you, Mickey, since this is the life you live, like, what's that like? And what do you deal with, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, so to speak, when it comes to CRM implementation from your clients?
Well, you know, I think timelines for CRM, you know, we get asked a lot about that. Sometimes it's when a client's in the midst of a implementation that just seems to be going on forever. And, you know, what's holding us up? Why can't we get this done? Or a school in the midst of selecting it. And, you know, some of that has to do with the timing. You know, as we talk about the beautification of a campus and how awesome the commencement periods are, you know, it does bring us back to the whole point of this solution, is that it's a way to better engage with students to get them to enroll or to keep them enrolled. Mm-hmm. That's what CRM is for. And, you know, depending upon where a school is in their enrollment cycle and in an implementation or the beginning of an implementation, you know, that will have some impact on the length of it sometimes. And I, you know, it's a tough question to answer. I've got a client who's asking, can we be live in 6 weeks? Well, I don't know about 6 weeks. Can you be live in 12 weeks? Absolutely. The question really always comes down to, what does live mean for you? And you know, when do you have to be live? You know, are there, what are those factors in there that have impact on it? So, you know, we've got some implementations that might go on for 2 years, and some that go on for 6 months or 4 months. And that really, most the difference between those timelines, one of the biggest factors is, what is that question? What are you going, you know, with what are you going live? I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes it's, you know, we want to pause and say, we want to be live just with our prospective student piece, to getting them to inquire and start that engagement nurturing. And once we're live with that, then we can go to the next phase. And I will say that I encounter more when I start an implementation in the fall. Right now, we're not encountering that because applications open October 1. They don't want to work and get inquiries up and running, and they need application to be ready to be turned on, which would then potentially talk about the application review process, as well as integration process. And so right now in the summer, you know, some, as we adjust timelines or scope it down to be sure that we can hit milestones with the client, or that they can hit their own milestone, is to say, well, let's talk about your application. How important is that to be live for fall 2022 class? And some will say, hey, it's, that's important, but more important is spring 22. Like, ooh, okay, when is spring 22 open? Well, that opens August 1. Whew, let's look at the clock. Let's look at the calendar. And, you know, that was fine if we started 2 weeks ago based on what you've told us you need. Or that's great. You can do that, but you can't wait to July 1 to your fiscal year to start and ensure that you have everything built, tested, and turned on August 1. Yeah. And so figuring out how to modify around that sometimes is tricky.
So for those who may be out there and are kind of going through this, I think what I just heard you say is, you know, figure out like those good points of scale, like where you can say, hey, up to this point, we're going to like maybe cut a line and we're going to say our goal is to get to here by this timeline. I think, you know, a lot of this, and we deal with this a lot, you know, in the kind of the ed tech space, is that, you know, our Salesforce, who's out there, like not Salesforce, the CRM, but our salespeople who are out there selling the dream, you know, they also sell this expectation of like, oh, well, this will be a simple lift. And there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of work that goes into getting this off the ground. And I think that, you know, in most cases, at least in my experience, that's not always how it, you know, how it comes to be. Yeah. So I think that what we're hearing and what we deal with, you know, the person, there's a lot of personality that comes out in this conversation, right? Like a lot of, I think I can fondly remember conversations with one IT department that I worked with that was, they were 100% brake pedal, right? I was the head of enrollment, and the issues that I was dealing with on my IT side was all about the brakes. I was all about the gas pedal, and I just, like, it was just this constant friction. So not only finding those points where you can scale the project, but also I think finding those strategic partners and getting that agreement on your campus to make sure that everyone has some skin in the game and everyone is like on the same page, because I think that's where another point of friction could really come about, is if you're trying to push an agenda and you have folks who are not lining up behind that, or there's just misalignment. And that misalignment is ultimately going to be felt down through the enrollment funnel, right? If we get to August 1 and your application isn't open, or your, you know, October 1, your financial aid process is not humming through, it's like, There's going to be an internal rub that has external, you know, visibility, and no one really wants that, because that's not going to help the process at all.
Hey, I know you're deeply engaged with this conversation, but we're going to pause just for a moment for an important word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Verity. Verity just launched their brand new student information system called Verity Student. Verity Student is everything you wish you had in your student information system, and then some. Verity Student combines top-notch, unparalleled compliance and efficiency-boosting processes with the best communication features built into one single platform. Verity Student streamlines academic tracking, document management with an electronic signature, and a built-in powerful contact center with multi-channel communication. The unfortunate complications that human errors prevent are virtually eliminated with their improved process workflow automation that paves the way for data and reporting that you can actually count on. It's the most efficient recruiting, enrollment, and retention process that you have ever seen. Get more than you have with less strain on your budget with Verity Student. Experience the cost efficiencies that their all-inclusive tool provides compared to other, more expensive tools with less functionality. The unified pricing includes a multi-channel communication hub at a fraction of the amount that you'd pay for multiple systems. Say goodbye to inefficiency. Say goodbye to disjointed communications. Say goodbye to Excel when you say hello to Verity Student. At Verity, they only know one direction and one speed. Always forward and always fast. Harness the power of one with Verity Student. Request a behind-the-scenes look at their new student information system, Verity Student, at meetverity.com. Again, that's meetverity.com.
I like what you're saying there. You know, and we've got a client, you know, just thinking of all these nuances that go into this. We have a client who's implementing now. Of course, we're talking summer, wanting a fall 22 application live, 50 different academic programs that need application and the application review. But some of them actually want it for spring. And so when we talk about how do we scale this back, well, we prioritize like, I don't know, 7 or 8 programs so that we can be live with them August 1 for their spring application. Everyone else that doesn't need it to the fall will be live October 1. And it buys time. And while we also know we need an integration that's not yet complete, we know that the integration, where the integration needs to happen between CRM and student information system isn't until application decisions are made. And so while that integration is nowhere near complete, I don't need that complete October 1. I really need that complete about December 1, maybe December 15. Sure. So we have, you know, there are ways to kind of scale this. If you're doing this internally and you don't have a team that really is cohesive, working together and holds each other accountable and allows other priorities to get in the way, then you can get yourself into a corner, because when you stagger it like that, it does put a little more pressure. There's less wiggle room when we're doing it this way. Now, we know that we have much more of the process in our hands. And have the ability to prioritize and ensure that our component of the work is done, which might be 95% of it. So in that scenario, I'm less worried about it. If we're doing 50% of the work in that scenario, I can be a little more worried if I see the team we're working with isn't as organized, can't meet other small deadlines. Then, you know, you can become a little nervous. And I think that's some of the factors that you have to think about for yourself and who are we as a team, even if these are people I haven't worked with before, or they're people I work with every day, do we hold ourselves accountable? I'm going to pivot a little bit and say, I think for CRM success, I think one of the key elements here is also keeping in mind how well you adopt what you do.
Yeah.
What you're building to ensure that it's being used to maximize, you know, the outcomes that you want from your CRM. Hopefully you're implementing components of a CRM that are most important for your strategies and your tactics. Sure. And if you're doing that, you want to be sure that you're fully adopting it. And sometimes that's another reason to scale back even. And it's something that we typically try to do with I would say 9 out of 10 clients in the sense that, you know, timeline's not an issue for us. We want all the bells and whistles, but if you aren't really ready yet for a lot of those bells and whistles, if you've never played bells or blown the whistle, then, you know, we want to scale you back and prepare you for that. You know, if you, you know, there's a reason that young children start their music course with the recorder, right? Yeah. Because it's a simple thing to learn. So we're not going to start the kids with the trombone. All right. That's what we're doing. Let's give you your recorder so that we can build you up and scaling for that. And we, our model, we just try to build this to two parts of the model, innovate and adopt. So let's go build something that we don't have or improve what we have, pause, ensure that we fully adopt it, and then jump back in. And the other thing I would add to that is, as you're doing that with that model, what you're really saying is that our implementation is truly never complete.
Yes.
And I like to build that culture of continuing. And part of building the culture internally, what I like to try to have clients do is, especially those who are kind of leading the charge, is how do we use the word implement? So when you've been live for 6 months and you want to add a feature or a type of functionality, let's say we want to add a chatbot. So I don't want to go into the group and say, look, we're going to add chatbot. We're implementing chatbot. we're implementing new territory assignments. We're implementing the application review that we've not done before, or we're, instead of adding a new program, we're implementing the new Masters of Economics program. You know, calling it that so everyone understands we're implementing, and we keep doing this to grow. Sure. And I think once you do that, everyone starts to buy in, and at least they understand it more, and they see it as a part of an evolution.
Yeah, I like that. You know, that you said two things there that really kind of stuck with me of, you know, the whole purpose, you know, going all the way back to the beginning when you said the whole purpose obviously is to create graduates. But along with that, you know, the purpose is really, you know, in a CRM is to gain something you don't have, to get something, to make a process better, to make it more seamless, to add something to your audience that you can like a way that you can connect with them. I think that that's the whole key. And I think the temptation sometimes in higher ed is to go after a new shiny piece of software because everyone else is doing it, even though you might have a tool in your arsenal right now that's really doing everything that it needs to do. So I think, and even going back to our first episode with Thomas Jefferson and understanding like how do we balance, you know, a single solution as opposed to maybe like six, you know, 10 or 32, as you know, in their case, of like other pieces of software that were kind of doing this process, and really understanding like what am I gaining from this implementation? What am I hoping to gain? And really having that laid out. I think that has a lot to do with ironing out the expectations on campus, getting that internal buy-in, having those, you know, those strategic timelines that can be met, because everyone then has this mindset of, hey, we're doing this because we need to innovate our process and we need to become better at our process. And we're all a part of becoming better at our process. So like not to simplify it down too much, but I think that really resonated with me of like innovate and adopt, because I think you're also right in the fact that so many institutions or businesses or whatever will get a CRM and then use the easy 40% of it and ignore the final 60%, because it's like, okay, well, we're on to the next thing, even though we haven't ever finished the last part. And I'm, you know, as a person, I'm notorious for this. My wife says I'm a strong starter and a bad finisher. And I think that's, you know, it's the nature of the world we live in. You know, there's lots of things to get distracted by and lots of, you know, new things to do. So Those are sage words of wisdom, Mr. Baines. Sage words of wisdom.
So I'm going to ask you a question here, Jamie.
Okay.
Do you happen to know your Myers-Briggs type?
I do. Yes.
Is it ENFP?
You're close. I am an ENTP.
TP. Okay.
Yeah. I'm all on the TF scale. I'm all thinking. I'm like ruthless when it comes to the
really?
Feeling part.
Okay.
I'm a real jerk.
Well, I think that the combination of the EN and the P, I'm an ENFP.
Okay.
The combination of the EN and the P, I think there's an analogy that a friend and mentor of mine used to reference for the personality type. It's like you could be in front of the room talking and it'd be to, you know, get to this peak of your conversation. If there's anything I say today that is most important that I need you to take home, it's this. Please. Oh, look at the squirrel. It's what you just.
So true.
Boom, you get started and you can lose focus and ready to move. Like it's one of those things. I am not known to be the strong finisher. I'm out of the gate. You know, I'm running. I'm running the sprint, not the marathon. Let's get going. And then I realize I'm in a marathon. I'm like, oh. I didn't train for the marathon.
That actually leads me to one question that I was thinking when you were talking a bit ago. You know, you've been through CRM implementations with dozens of your clients. And so you have tons of experience. In your mind, is there any like, I'm not going to say one particular, you know, key to success, but is there like a person or a role or something that helps that process to most of the time be, you know, wildly successful, like a campus asset or a cheerleader, strategic cheerleader? I don't even know what, but like, what do you think about when I ask that question?
I don't think there's, there's not a single role. You might have a single person playing multiple roles to get you across the finish line. I think you need the cheerleader. You need the driver, the champion. You also need a decision-making level person that's driving it. You know, if we look back at episode one at what happened at Jefferson, right? You know, they had this merger going on. They had timelines that were kind of set.
Yeah.
So while their change was drastic and significant, they had deadlines that could not be adjusted. So part of that was out of the control. That helped force some decisions and keep them on task. Where I see things go off the rail is when you don't have some of that and you don't have someone pushing the team to say, no, we said 10 weeks. You know, we're 3 weeks in. We're not saying 10 weeks now. We're saying 7 weeks. So what are we doing now? Like, it, and it doesn't have to be as cold as that, like you thinkers want to be.
I see what you did there.
No, but that is, I would say, you know, something I learned over time is, it's a part of my personality where I can turn that switch on and be like, no, we said this was 10 weeks 2 weeks ago. So that means it's 8 weeks. I didn't mean 10 weeks from whenever we feel like we want to start.
In perpetuity, 10 weeks. Yeah.
So like we need to move, and you know, it's not that you're a bad person because you didn't get something completed in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's that we're behind 2 weeks and now we need to understand why. And next week can't be starting at week one. Next week we need to be by up to week three's level of work. So how do we do that?
Sure.
And how do we pivot? So I think there's a level of flexibility that has to come in play, level of comfort and kindness in holding people accountable, not being rude about it, but being realistic about it. And I think those are like key elements you need to have. You know, we've got clients going through an implementation. I won't say a specific one that I'm referencing. This happens somewhat frequently. Is there's a piece of functionality in the CRM that someone up high, and somewhat unrelated maybe to the team using it, liked about the tool and said, we want to be sure we're buying that part of it and we're using it. And then the people implementing it, and that will be the end users, still have never even seen the tool.
Yeah.
When you get to implement it, and like, we don't even know what this is. What is it supposed to do? Why are we like that? You know, that level of communication, how do we pause that and stop that? Because a lot of times when I'm involved in the implementation, we weren't involved in that buying process.
Yeah.
We didn't know that someone had that like and desire and want.
Sure.
And so now we have to try to ramp up and get everyone up to speed. That happens way more than you would think.
You don't surprise me by saying that.
Well, and maybe the listeners don't really think it happens, but it does happen. And you know, having someone, a senior level champion who knows at that level, and for those you and I are on video, and everyone else is listening, I'm pointing up in the air high here. Like at that upper level, that someone who knows what others on their plateau are thinking and what their expectations are. So you can set those expectations, set your goals, associate the right timeline with it. Someone that can pull all that together, I think, is key.
Yeah.
Those I would say, it's not a single role. There are multiple roles you could potentially have. And I've seen a single person play those multiple roles.
Yeah.
But if it's not the same person, those individuals have to work together and stay in communication.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I feel like I'm the kind of person that would have the vision for being able to implement a CRM, but definitely not the detail orientation of like, hey, how do we work backwards from a timeline to say, hey, we're going to get this, this, and this. And then, so it's, you know, I put a lot of, I give a lot of praise to our client success managers at DD because they're just so good at like keeping things moving. And I think that that's part of it, right? We need someone who's going to help keep the trains on time, someone who's going to keep the influencer aware of what's happening and not happening, you know, someone who can really run a Trello board or make sure that the project parts of this process are really, you know, moving at the rate that they need to move. Because you're absolutely right in that sometimes those, you know, one-offs or, you know, one little sticky part of the process can really slow it down. So I think the takeaway from this episode is really, first of all, manage your expectations of what you want your CRM to accomplish and make sure that you are bringing something on board that can actually improve your process to innovate, as Mickey said, in the words of the wise Mickey Baines, innovate, and adopt. Like, those are two big imperatives. There we go. You see that? I use my use of high school English there at the imperative language. And then the other part is, like, let's make sure that we have realistic scale. Scale, if you have a short timeline, then you also have to scale accordingly. So there's, you know, I visualize in my head this continuum, right, where it's like, if you have a 2-year period to implement while you're going to have retain your old piece of software, then 2 years is a lot. You can, like, you can build that whole thing out and then just flick a switch and you're ready to go. I mean, obviously there'll be a little testing, but if you've got a 6-week or an 8-week timeline, then obviously it's not going to all be done at the same time. So make sure that those timelines are realistic and that you get the proper buy-in on campus. And for those of you who are, you know, wrestling with this, I would open us up. You know, Mickey and I can both be found on LinkedIn. We're both people who have gone through this process to one degree or another. We'd love to, you know, talk with you through the woes and the triumphs that you've had in the process. So I'm talking too much, Mickey.
No, I'm just thinking, well, that, you know, in addition to that, you know, what, you know, if you're going through it or thinking about it or had an experience that you think was different and unique, tell us. That's, you know, that's an episode. Maybe that's having you on the episode to help share it with us. It may be you sharing it and asking the question, and it's one of these on my mind or on our minds.
On our minds,
right?
Or on your mind.
Yes, on your mind. That's right. It's an on your mind episode.
Look at that.
Yeah. So, and that's how we can help ensure that what we're providing is what you want to hear more about.
Yeah, that's us making the appeal for user generated content right there for all of you who are paying attention to UCG out there. UGC, sorry. It's early. Mickey, what else do we need to talk about today?
I don't think we have to talk about too much other than, you know, I can't wait till we have this episode live and streaming. I'm going to take a clip from it. You know, the words of the sage, Mickey Bay. I'm going to just loop that.
Yeah.
In my kitchen while I'm making dinner so the rest of the family can hear that.
That's good. I think that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it'll be helpful to annoy the family, but to also let them know that some people at least think I have something to offer with intelligence. So.
And we have a couple other episodes that we're working on right now. So for those of you who are interested in Comflow personalization, and what other one are you working on, Mickey? I know you've got a.
Well, we're going to have a conversation with. You mentioned the term client success manager, customer success manager. We're bringing in a client success manager from one of the more popular CRM platforms. You know, I want to start diving in and having conversation to help you understand as a user of a CRM, how can your vendor partnership work to your advantage? How can you lean on that client success manager to ensure that you are using the tool properly or that you're getting the support, or if you're running into a hurdle with the tool that you can get beyond that? How to leverage those relationships.
Ooh, that's going to be a good one. That's going to be
good.
Can't
wait.
I can't wait either. That does it. Today's a short one, everyone. You guys get a few minutes back in your day. Thanks for joining us here at CRMprov. And in the words of the sage Mickey Baines, we hope you have a great day and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening, everyone.